The first ever draft pick of the Edmonton Oilers in 1979 went on to play over 1,250 NHL games, another 200 in the playoffs, and won 6 Stanley Cups. And last month was announced he will be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame at a date yet to be determined. Kevin Lowe joins us. Kevin, congratulations on the Hall of Fame induction. We'll get to that in a second, but we have you on really for story time, where we like to talk about everybody's career path and, you know, getting to the NHL. And of course, you know, you're playing, you grew up in Quebec. You played for the Ramparts in the Quebec Major Junior League. Then you got drafted, by the Oilers in 1979. But let's talk, maybe go back a little bit further. When did you start playing hockey, and were you always a defenseman?
Hey, Jason, nice to chat with you. Great to be on the show. No, I wasn't. I started playing hockey. I started skating when I was 3 years old. Our family, Lowe's brothers, had a dairy where we made milk and ice cream. And,
nice.
You know, we didn't have cows. We manufactured milk and ice cream. And so they built the first public skating rink on the property. So as a little guy, my dad would bring me to work with him, and he'd put me on the outdoor rink and shut the door and leave me out there, and he'd send one of his associates to go fetch me after 2 or 3 hours. So obviously that's the way I learned to skate. But we had a big hockey family. 36 in my generation, all the boys played hockey and all the girls skied and came to watch hockey. And this was all throughout my time in my hometown of Lachute, Quebec.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, basically, the rink was your babysitter.
It was, Strudge. Yeah, it was my playpen, or as my dad said, it's a place I could lock him up and leave him there and not have to worry about him because I couldn't climb over the boards yet.
So, you know, obviously hockey was something. Now, did you love it right from the get-go, Kevin, or did you play a lot of other sports as well growing up?
Yeah, you know, in Quebec, there was a lot of baseball in the summertime and hockey in the wintertime. But I did curl when my dad passed away when I was 13. A friend of my mom's, they were quite active in curling, and my mom wanted to keep me as active as possible. So I really enjoyed curling, although never went on very far because hockey eventually was, the main focus. We played hockey like crazy. I had a cousin, two cousins drafted in the NHL, but they're all good hockey players. So we always had a lot of pickup games and spent, you know, lots of time on the rink. Lachute got its first covered rink, I want to say, in about 1965 or something. So I would have been 5 or 6 years old and then started playing indoors at that point.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, you look at it, and it was just, you guys were just out there playing for fun. And maybe just kind of figure out a lot of things about the game that now we're teaching the kids on these covered indoor rinks.
Well, we had a lot of fun, except, so you asked if I was always a defenseman. No, I actually started as a goalie. Maybe that's why I could block shots. And one of my older cousins, and a goalie with no mask, mind you, and one of my older cousins could really slap the puck, and he hit me in the nose with a slap shot. So that kind of ended my goaltending. And then I started off as a forward for Mosquito and Pee Wee hockey, I believe. And then my dad moved me to defense. And his explanation was that the defenseman got to play more, so more time on the ice. Maybe I was just too slow to be a forward. I'm not sure, but he said it's because I got to play more.
Kevin, in theory, it does make sense. Kevin Lowe joins us. So you're a defense when you move up. Now, Kevin, before I get to that, you lose your father at 13 years of age, you know, which is awful. I've read so many books and stories on athletes that some people that have adversity in their life early, it can really help them, and they don't know it but right away. And, you know, losing your father, how did that impact you, do you think, as an athlete?
Yeah, good question. Well, I had great, great support. Again, mentioning the size of our family. I had great mentorship, cousins, older cousins, and, real positive role models in and around me. So, no fear of getting on, going to the wrong side of the tracks, I guess. But it was hard. I think you know, the hockey was a good escape for me, because when you get out there playing, you forget about what else is going on. So I think that's probably the main thing. And I also had my mom. So there were four in our family, and I was 5 years younger than my next closest sibling. So by then, my brother and my two sisters were living in Montreal, which is about an hour away. So it was just my mom and I. But we had a lot of bonding time. My mom would drive me to the games, and she just passed away last summer. But she was by far my biggest fan, and was there for me for she couldn't help. Well, she understood the game quite a bit, I can tell you. We'd get into hockey conversations, and she could call a spade of who was playing well and who wasn't, and who was working and who wasn't. So I probably, that was as much of a positive hockey role model as I needed.
Yeah, that sounds like a great experience. You know, I think as a parent or as a player, it's nice to have your parents just support you and maybe evaluate your effort level rather than maybe on your skill level at times.
Totally, Strudge. Yeah, I mean, now there's more emphasis on skill, I guess. But I remember my dad and my mom saying, you know, an assist was just as important as a goal. So, and I scored a lot as a kid. You know, usually the better players when you're growing up in minor hockey can do that sort of thing. But I think that and then again, like, I had cousins and my brother Kenny, they were all actively involved in hockey, so they're all very supportive. But the one thing our family was never afraid of to say, you know, listen, you didn't have a good game. And they weren't candy coating, and it wasn't that you're a bad player, you just didn't play good, and you got to pull up your socks for the next one.
Kevin Lowe joins us. And Kevin, I think a lot of people might forget, in junior when you got drafted, like, you were an elite-level offensive defenseman. You led your team in scoring as a defenseman, for the lead in scoring the year you got drafted by the Oilers. And, you know, I know that they drafted Paul Coffey, so that obviously changed your role. But talk about that, I guess. So you're in junior hockey and the draft, and Edmonton had just come into the draft. And I know I've heard you say how you didn't even know Edmonton was actually in the NHL at that time. Like, it was in the late 70s. It was just a different time, right? Like, it wasn't like you could look up stats on everything on other teams. And, you know, the expansion draft had just happened. So did you go to the draft in 79, or was there even a draft?
Yeah, it was postponed that year, Jason, because of the NHL, of the WHA teams joining the NHL, so they hadn't sorted out all the rules and determining who would get the, you know, they hadn't even had the expansion draft and things like that. Probably not as well organized as they are today. So the draft was, well, we didn't even know when the draft was going to be. Finally found out it was in August. I was, you know, the thing about the 79 draft, it was two draft years wrapped up in one, because they decided to go start drafting the younger players, so the 18 turning 19 year old players. And so guys like Ray Bourque and Tom McCarthy and Keith Brown and all these guys popped into the first round of my year, who would have been high first rounders in the next year, the 1980 draft. So that's what really bumped me back to 21. Boston was taking two defensemen for sure. I think they had the fourth pick and they had the 10th pick. And so all of a sudden, Ray Bourque showed up because he was an 18-year-old. So Boston took Ray Bourque and Brad McCrimmon. And you know, so on and so forth. So I just kept getting bumped down the draft. At one point, Hockey News had me rated fourth overall, just about a month before the draft. But, yeah, in terms of knowing things, I mean, Hockey News showed up in the mail once a month to your house. And that's really the only hockey information you got. We were living in a rural town, and, you know, didn't I had it by then. I certainly had an agent that had a little better understanding, but it's not anything like it is today in terms of, you know, guys like Bob McKenzie and all of, you know, the draft prognosticators and the amount of coverage that they have. The draft shows, none of that existed in my day.
And Kevin, I'm assuming you weren't at the draft. You're just at home.
I was at home, study. When the draft was starting, Alan Eagleson had about 10 guys in the first round that year. He said, I'll call you as soon as you find out. I said, well, when will that be? And he said, an hour and a half max. So after about, it might have been 2.5 hours, I thought, oh, this is not good. So I just hopped in the car and went to my cousin's place, and they poured me a rye, thinking that, this kid's going to have his dream shattered. He might not even get drafted. So shortly after one rye, my mom phoned and said, Alan Eagleson phoned, you better come home. He's got a number here for you to phone. So I got back, and that's when he told me. He said, well, you got your wish. You wanted to be a first-rounder. And I said, well, that's great. And, you know, how come it took so long? Well, you were the last pick in the first round. And again, didn't know Edmonton was in the NHL at that point. I said, Edmonton? They're not even in the NHL. But I guess it all worked out.
Yeah, I would say so, Kevin. So you get drafted to Edmonton. This is now August. Was Sather, Barry Fraser, who was the first person to call you from the Oilers? Or did anyone call you?
Yeah, Barry Fraser phoned me. I actually, of course, the Oilers were playing the Nordiques in the WHA in those years leading up to my draft year. So I actually had a chance meeting with Glenn Sather, unbeknownst to me. I used to, my last year junior, I wasn't going to high school, so I'd go to the rink and work out and then, you know, watch the WHA teams practice. And Glenn actually came and spoke with me and said, introduced himself, and I told him who I was, and he said, oh, I know who you are. And so, which was kind of neat. I remember sitting down with Bill Dineen one time, who was coaching the Hartford Whalers, father of Kevin Dineen and many of the Dineens, Gordy Dineen and stuff. So it was, but he had a fair amount of interaction with the pros. Rob Ramage was one of my many calls when I got in the Hall of Fame, Rob Ramage and Craig Hartsburg and Ricky Vive, Michel Goulet had gone to play for the Birmingham Bulls my last year junior. I had been offered the same contract, so I remember going to watch those guys play against the Nordiques and thinking, wow, those guys are way better than me. I wouldn't have a chance playing right now, but anyhow, Rob Ramage said, you know, wish that I had to come play that year. It would have been fun. Not sure things would have turned out this way, whether I would have been drafted earlier or later, because I would have played pro and maybe not done it so well or done better. But staying that last year in junior, Martin Madden was my general manager, and he really strongly recommended that I stay and play. He didn't see it. You know, it's the whole thing, you know, why rush? You're going to play pro for a lot of years. You're going to get there. You're going to be a pro. Why not have one more year junior and mature a bit physically and enjoy the ride before you get to the next level.
Kevin Lowe joins us here on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. So, Kevin, you're drafted at 20. You come to camp, an expansion team in Edmonton, although it's a little bit different because they had this guy by the name of 99 that they were able to keep over. So, but what had you ever seen Gretzky play? Had you heard about Gretzky before you came to your first training camp?
Oh, no question. I mean, there was... Years ago, there was on the weekends, it was called Weekend Magazine. They used to be an insert in the major newspapers and, you know, stories of about Canadians. And there was when Wayne was about 12, I believe they had this, you know, one of the big national stories about how this phenom. So knew about him from that point on. I actually saw him play again my last year junior when the Racers came in. And then when the Oilers came in, and just, you know, marveled at, you know, a guy like that so young could be so darn good. And then met him really early on in training camp. Well, for the first week we had a rookie camp, which he wasn't at. And we had that camp at the old Edmonton Gardens. And then by the time we stepped on the Coliseum ice for the main camp, a day or two into that, he came up to me and said, I think, you know, be a good idea if you and I got a place together. And I said, geez, I'm not even sure I'm going to make the team. And he said, oh, don't worry, you're going to make the team. So the rest, again, was history.
So he came up to you and just said, hey, and so you've seen him play. Obviously, you knew he was good. And then you guys became roommates, and obviously that helped things out. But those early years just playing with Wayne, Kevin, as most hockey players are the best. Well, I think any athlete usually knows who's good, right? You talk to kids. I coach six-year-olds. They knew right away who was the best kid on the team at that point, right? Like, most athletes know who's the best one. Like, and your team right away, did you guys say, okay, this guy's pretty special. We got to make sure we protect him? Or was that overblown a bit that he just couldn't get hit?
Well, of course, he had played with a lot of the players on the team the year before in Edmonton in the World Hockey Association. So, you know, Brett Callaghan, B.J. McDonald, Ron Chipperfield, Al Hamilton, Peter Driscoll, Cowboy Flett. There was a pile of guys that played that last year. So and he was playing at 17. So they knew him. Of course, I think he won the scoring. He tied for the scoring lead in the WHA. So no question, this guy was a phenom. But I think the thing, there's, you know, the code of protecting your best player, but also Wayne was so good at rallying the troops and making everybody feel good about themselves that I think players just naturally wanted to I don't want to say protect, but to make sure that, you know, he's not vulnerable because of who he was and not necessarily because of the player he was, if that makes any sense. He was really well liked. He was just a happy kid and really enjoyed winning and scoring, and he really enjoyed his teammates, and so I think people just naturally gravitated to wanting to support him in whatever way they could.
Kevin, what are the goals that you had when you went into that training camp? Obviously to make the team, but you know, what were your personal goals and how you could fit in or contribute?
Oh, like, you know, Strutty, you could probably answer that too. It was really just all about trying to make the team, right? And then and then trying to get in the next game, and you go into the dressing room the morning of games or days of games, see if your jersey's hanging up, if you're playing, and yeah. I mean, you're surviving, right? It's really, I think in pro hockey, I don't know if it's changed anymore. You gotta give those kids a few years to really settle. And I don't think I really felt comfortable till about our second year. Probably by the end of my second year, when we played the Canadians and the Islanders, started to establish myself as a player and feeling comfortable. But the early going is just the fear of going to the minors. Although that wouldn't have been all that bad, but you're sort of weaned on, the minors is a bad thing, but a lot of times it could be a really good thing. So I was fortunate. I guess what helped me is I scored a goal right away in the first game. I had a fight, so that always buys a little bit of time. And then I think Glenn realized that he was just going to go with the young guys and wasn't expecting to win or be great right away. Just wanted to nurture all the young players as much as he could, hoping that they drafted correctly and that eventually it would turn into something.
You know, you get in your first year, you're like, yeah, Gretzky's pretty good. Mark Messier, though, it's very different. Like, some guys are NHL ready right away. Some need a few years. I don't know if you knew anything about Messier. He got drafted. He was the only 18-year-old drafted in the 1979 draft. And then, of course, played in the NHL with you guys. What was your first impressions of the Moose?
Well, he had a funny story. He was a holdout for his first training camp. didn't get a contract signed. A bit of a precursor, I guess, for the future years. And thinking, wow, that's pretty bold for a young guy. But he missed the first number of days of camp. I can't remember, but I'll never forget his first day on the ice with all of us. We were actually practicing at the U of A that particular day, and thinking, wow, this guy's big and moves pretty well for a young guy, and he clearly had a maturity about him that was, he had more of a maturity on the ice than I did, even though I was a year and a half older than him. So clearly the Oilers lucked out getting them where they did, and obviously Barry Fraser knew something about him that was special, because you're right, he didn't. Break out right away like Wayne did, but it didn't take him very long to become a dominant player in the NHL. And in fact, I think that first playoff year, we played the Flyers in the 1980 playoffs, and the Flyers had the best team in the league that year. They went 35 games undefeated, and we played them in the first round. And I remember Bobby Clark at the end of the playoffs saying, of course Gretzky's going to be great, but watch out for that Messier. That looks like that guy's going to be special.
You know, Kevin, it's interesting. When I think of Mark Messier, I think of the finished product. That's what I started remembering, watching what it was, what he became, the goal scorer, the intimidator, all that stuff. So what did he evolve in during that time? Because it's hard to imagine thinking of a young Mark Messier evolving into anything rather than just being who he was or who he became.
Yeah, he was a winger. Initially he played a lot with Matty Hagman. He played on a line with Cowboy Flett for a short while that first year. And old school hockey, Mess would wander. Cowboy is a right hand shot, right wing, and Mess ever wandered over his wing. Cowboy would, get the hell out of here and slash him in the back of the leg or something because he was over on his wing. And then his game just started evolving. I think he played a little bit with Wayne from time to time, and I think he grew up as a center as a kid. But I think all of us owe a lot to have played with Wayne and to be able to, you know, learn from him and learn not to take a back seat. Glenn Sather, no question, was a big part of all of our development because he encouraged us to think big. I remember him saying things like, you know, we're playing the Montreal Canadiens. You guys can be as good as any Montreal Canadian team ever. I mean, how would he have known that to say that? And maybe he didn't. Maybe he was just trying to give us a lot of false hope. But we had a lot of encouragement. And of course, Wayne leading the way, doing what he did, certainly gave us a lot of opportunity as well.
Kevin Lowe joins us. And Kevin, you know, it's kind of amazing when you think about it. Yourself, Messi, and Gretzky are 1 year. Then the next year, it's Anderson, Curry, and Coffey that come in to a team, and, you know, six Hall of Famers. And then you got Grant Fuhr coming in as well. But you look at your role on that team and how you kind of fit in. And when Messi talks about you being the adult of the group, how are you able to be the mature one amongst that group of, you know, seven really young guys?
I'd say a couple reasons, and I'm not sure I was always the maturest of the bunch, but certainly at a young age, I was always encouraged, was really empowered to do a lot as a young person. Working in the summertime, you know, I had started my working when I was 5 years old, and, you know, driving trucks, not on the highways, mind you, but, you know, driving trucks at a young age. It's almost like growing up on a farm where kids tend to grow up quicker. And then in my minor hockey career, I always played a year or two ahead of myself. So I was always playing with older players. And then, probably last but not least, having a defense partner like Lee Foglin and became great friends. He was a mentor. Lee had been in the league for 5 years at that point. And he was such a great leader that you just had to watch him and emulate him. Al Hamilton, although Hammy didn't play a bunch, but Hammy was a class act. So there was a lot of great Ron Chipperfield. We had so many great role models that, I mean, if you're paying attention, you're going to learn something. And then lastly, I guess I was never afraid to, throughout my minor hockey days and junior days, not afraid to be frank with anybody. Anything I ever said was always, you know, they knew it was from the heart and it was right, or hopefully it was right. And I wasn't going to ask of anything of anyone else that I couldn't do myself. So, but again, my really fortunate at a young age, my dad, you know, tried to mold me as being a leader. Growing up in a pretty much a French town, we were English speaking. I could speak a little bit of French, not as well as I can speak today. And I remember as a captain of the team, he'd make me phone all the players and tell them when practice was. And, you know, it was like fingernails on the chalkboard for me because I really, you know, I was embarrassed trying to speak French. But, I'd get off the phone. He said, you know, didn't that feel good? And I said, well, no, I feel like an idiot. But what he was trying to do was he was trying to push me out of my comfort zone. And I tell you, the French players really appreciated it because I was making an effort to speak their language.
When you look at a guy like Lee Foglin, you know, all your peers of that time with the Oilers, you all talk about and revere Lee. And, you know, I think that maybe the casual fan doesn't give him enough respect. What was it about him? Because I didn't get the sense he was a big talker at all.
No, he wasn't, Strutty. You're right. But he was just, first of all, such a gentleman, such a warrior, such a class act, that I think we all looked at him as, okay, that's, you know, Lee was a little bit older. He was married, had kids. So I think we all sort of looked at him and say, oh, all right, that's what we hope our adult life's going to look like. And he was a good player. He was a first-round pick in his own right. Fierce competitor that, the one many times stand out for me, but the one that really stands out for me. We were playing in Detroit, and there was a player who was kind of beaking off in the papers the day leading up to the game that, you know, he was going to play against Wayne that night, and he wasn't going to go easy like everybody else on Wayne. And Lee Foglin, before, after the national anthem, before the first puck was dropped, we happened to be in the starting lineup. Wayne was lining up against this guy, and Foggy meandered into the faceoff dot, actually stopped the referee from dropping the puck, and actually pointed at the guy and said, if you lay so much as a finger on this guy tonight, pointing to Wayne, you're a dead man. And it just eliminated all the, you know, all the fear in everybody. And I mean, who does that? Certainly don't see that anymore, but that's the type of guy Lee was. He was a great hockey player. He and I played a lot of big minutes against all the other opposition's top lines and killed penalties and were on the ice a lot of times at the last minute of the game. And yeah, he deserves a ton of credit for what the Oilers became.
Kevin Lowe joins us. So Kevin, you start to get better. That Montreal series, I think, obviously was the one where I said, hey, maybe we're pretty good. And then, like a lot of teams, maybe, you know, you had the devastating loss to the LA Kings the next year, especially game three. Everybody knows you blew the 5-0 lead. And, you did lose in the cup final, but I would guess that LA King loss might have been even a bigger learning experience at that young time in your guys' career. But for your relationship with Glenn Sather, how did that evolve, and how did he push your buttons the right way? Because it seemed like Paul Coffey's talked about it openly. Like, they really butted heads at times. He didn't realize till afterwards it was really good for him. How did you and Slats interact?
Well, we, again, rooming with Wayne early on, and Glenn and Ann, his wife, you know, they would invite the young guys over for dinner from time to time, so I'd go over with Wayne, and, you know, it's pretty neat to be able to be there in the NHL, you know, having dinner at your coach's house. You tend to develop a deeper bond than, I guess, than the typical professional relationship than pro sports. So that was a start. I don't know if Glenn really ever had to push my buttons. I think I kind of knew early on what he wanted. And so I try to deliver that as much as I can. And you know, and that's, hey, let's face it, I don't know if players can do the same thing today. But in our day, my day, Strutty's day, you know, if things weren't going well in the game, you go out there and run around a bit, try to take a few guys' heads off. Obviously I wasn't going to score a ton of goals. And if you did that, you demonstrated to Glenn, yeah, you're ready to play or you care enough. And, you know, I can't recall, and maybe I just had too many concussions, I can't remember, but I can't recall Glenn really ever being on me too much.
But what about when he got on other guys? How did you interact with that? Was it okay, or did that make a group mentality when it was like, hey, if he's getting on Coffee, that would motivate the whole group as well?
Yeah, good point. No, as soon as he went back into his coach's room and shut the door, you know, one of us would be the first, you know, to say quickly, well, screw him. What does he know anyways? Let's just go play. Let's just go play for ourselves. Screw the coaches kind of thing, just to try to lighten up the mood in the room. And you know, if he is getting on, and he didn't do that too often. Glenn was as good as anybody in terms of trying to get the best out of players and wasn't a big screamer. Certainly he and Koff, you know, butted heads a number of times, but not like some of the other horror stories you hear about players. But we really supported one another because we knew it was just a matter of time before it was one of us. You know, so if it happened to be happening to another guy, we'd be quick to support them with the first opportunity.
Joined by Kevin Lowe. And Kevin, you know, after all this time of all these games, the Stanley Cups, the playoff games, great success. You recently got the call about joining the Hall. Take us, when you saw the phone number coming in or heard Lanny's voice, what emotions did you feel?
Yeah. I'd been up for 19 years, so I really didn't think it was going to happen and really okay with it, to be honest. I mean, probably people who are listening to the show have heard me say this. I didn't really think I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm proud of my career, and I know that I was a very good hockey player and probably a hard worker and did a lot of winning in my playing days. But every so often it would keep popping up over the years that I was up and this might be the year. So I was working in my yard and the phone rang and I saw it was a 416 number and I thought, generally if I don't know who's calling, I don't even answer it. But I thought, 416, that's Toronto, you know. And I knew that they were having, I think it was a 4:30 Eastern time announcement. And this was about noon our time in Edmonton. And I thought, 416, I'm going to answer it. And as soon as I heard it was Lanny's voice, he goes, Kevin, it's Lanny. And I'm thinking to myself for a brief second before he even said hi, I'm thinking, surely to God he's not phoning me to tell me I didn't make the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, my heart just stopped. It's like, I can't believe this is even happening, really. And so it was pretty cool, very cool, obviously, and emotional. I didn't realize that what they do at the Hall now is that they record the whole call from Lanny. So luckily I didn't say anything really dumb on the call, but Lord knows I wanted to. But I couldn't wait to get off. I mean, he kind of went on and on. I love Lanny, and it's always an honor to talk to him, but I couldn't wait to get off the phone to give Karen a call and tell her, because I know she's been so supportive and waiting all these years. And then the next call would have been my mom, but as I say, unfortunately, she passed last summer. But she said, in her last months of her life, saying, "Listen, honey, I know. Well, we all know you should be in the Hall of Fame, and I know it's going to happen someday. Don't you worry." So she was right.
That's pretty sweet. Now, obviously, Kevin, the amount of you had, basically, you're thinking, 40 plus years in hockey. If you go, because I'm sure you probably got buddies that you played hockey with in minor hockey that you're still in touch with every now and then in junior. And how many days did it take you to get back to everybody who either left messages or text you?
I literally just finished this morning, and So the way it works is they phone you, let you know. They ask you to keep it quiet for an hour till the announcement, so you phone your family and stuff. And then there was about a 90-minute conference call with the national media. So that brought me to about 5 o'clock Mountain Time. And at that point, got together with my kids that were in Edmonton. Karen was actually not even in Edmonton. And some friends. And didn't look at my phone until I went to bed that night. And I screenshotted. I had 251 emails, 323 text messages, and 146 voicemails. So, of course, the next day tried to start, returning some of those. And it was like whack-a-mole. I'd return three and get five more back. So, and that's been the best part, to be honest. Ray Bourque and I go back to that 1979 draft. We roomed together in a junior all-star tournament in London, Ontario at Christmas of 78, I guess it was. And we always sort of stayed, we stayed in touch and stuff, and then we had drifted off. So he phoned me yesterday most of the guys, you get a guy like Steve Yzerman and so experienced at that, left me a nice long voicemail and said, "Listen, I know you're busy. Don't phone me back. I know you got a lot of people to talk to, but just want to let you know how I feel." Talked to all our Hall of Fame guys, of course, right away. Wayne phoned and Mark and talked to Craig McTavish over in Switzerland. A lot of my still to this day great friends. This morning I did about the last 20 and finally, my phone is clean, although a few more have drifted in since then.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on a great career. And I look forward to whenever it happens, sharing it with your family and close friends and your speech. Do you know who's going to introduce you yet?
No, someone asked me that already, Greg. But I haven't thought that far. I know Ray Bourque. As I say, we were chatting yesterday. He said it's, and I've heard this from a couple other guys. It, you know, it's an experience that you'll never forget, that whole weekend.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, it's right now it's scheduled the 13th to the 16th of November, but they said they'll update us in August. But, yeah, I don't know who that will be, and I don't even know where who to thank. And but I know what I'm looking forward to most, to be honest, is to see my picture up in our little Hall of Fame at Rogers Place. That's going to be surreal to even see it up there. So that's probably what I'm looking forward to most.
You're talking the one in the Hall of Fame room.
Correct.
Where it has all the Hall of Fame guys, yeah. Nice. Well, are they going to have a good photo of you? Is it going to be like when you're playing, when you had like the flowing hair, like from your early days?
40 pounds lighter and hair, yeah, probably. Well, hopefully. I don't know what they're going to do, but.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, and once again, congratulations on a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, thanks, fellas. Thanks for the time. Have a good weekend.